Renew our home Bible studies this Tuesday. The bulletin says that it's at the Cotton's house. Of course, that was printed before Katie fell Friday night and broke her wrist. Many of you, I hope all of you are aware of that, but she did fall Friday, and they have to go back to the doctor. They don't know if there'll be surgery involved or what will be the result of that, but she did fall and break her wrist, so it will be at our house instead of at the Cotton's house Tuesday night. We're going to do something we did. Time's got away. I don't know if it was last year or 2 years ago. We're going to take some songs that we sing quite often and either look at the title or one of the verses and make sure we know what we're singing. Well, there are some songs we sing them and we sing them and we sing them, but we don't really know what the meaning behind the words are. And we need to make sure that we sing with understanding. So Tuesday night, we'll look at a couple songs that we do that with. Hope you'll come and be there for that. Wednesday night, this is the fifth week of our, so this Wednesday night will be the singing service. Be prepared for that. Rita has got more information for us that we can be praying about. This coming week, she will go and get her port placed in her chest. And of course, the week after that, once the port is in place, then they can start the treatment. She will start this week the port. The following week after that, she will start her chemotherapy. It'll be a series of a treatment. Then there'll be a three-week break. And then another treatment, it'll just be in that series of 3 weeks. So that'll happen for four different rounds. So we can be praying for that. And at least the plan right now is once that series is done, then the radiation will start. So we now have an idea of what she'll be dealing with and when, and we need to constantly be mindful of that. Glad that Marvin's back, been answered prayers for that, and glad there are visitors here. A lot of things going on. Let's be mindful of our opportunities. In Exodus 12, there is the origination, for lack of a better word, of the Passover. There's a lot of times God has wanted His people to remember things. The Feast of Tabernacles was designed to remind His people about how He provided for them during the journeys of the wilderness, how He, when they were in tents, how He took care of them. The Feast of Passover, or not Passover, but Pentecost, that Feast of the First Fruits, to let them be reminded, I have taken care of you. I have given you the physical things you need. The first feast that they had to be at was Passover, to remind them of how in Egypt God protected His people, those who had been obedient to what He asked for. In Exodus 12, we find in the origination of that first command of what they were to do. In verse 15, it says, I will pass through the land of Egypt this night, Exodus 12, 15, and I will smite all the firstborn of the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and against all... This is verse 12. And against all the gods of Egypt I will execute judgment. I am the Lord. The blood shall be to you for a token on the houses where you are. And where I see the blood, I will pass over you. And the plague shall not be upon you to destroy you, but I will smite the land of Egypt. And this day shall be to you a memorial. Before it ever happened, he said, we're going to remember this. We're not going to forget it. This will be a memorial. You shall keep it as a feast to the Lord throughout your generations. It hasn't happened yet. And he said, this is going to go on. You shall keep it as a feast by an ordinance forever. 7 days shall you eat unleavened bread. Even the first day shall you put away leaven out of your houses. For whosoever eats leavened bread from the first day till the seventh, that soul shall be cut off from Israel. And so can we put ourselves there? He's already told them, we're going to remember this. And we're going to remember it for a long time. But go back that very night. He said, you look through your house. This is in verse 15. He said, you will look on the first day, you will look through your house, and you will put away all the leaven from that house. We're going to talk about leaven this morning. What, first of all, here, Jews, had we been faithful at that point under this law, when that 7-day feast began, we couldn't call ourselves faithful unless we did this. We would have had to have gone through our house. Every cabinet we owned, every cupboard, every Tupperware bowl. We've got to think about your kitchen. And think about all the places we've got various degrees of types of food. We would have had to gone through every bit of it. All the flour, all the sugar. We would have gone through all that stuff to make sure we didn't leave one trace of leaven. You see, getting rid of some of it wasn't enough. Getting rid of most of it wasn't enough. A little leaven leavens the lump. You couldn't get rid of it. You couldn't get rid of some or most. You had to get rid of all of it because you just leave a little bit and we're no longer faithful. Just leave a little bit and then it spreads, and that little has become a lot. We would have had to have done this over and over and over throughout our generations, throughout our life. Now, the applications for us. God talked about leaven in the New Testament as well as a spiritual application. A fleshly occurrence, spiritual teachings for us. The spiritual application is sin can spread. They had to get rid of all the leaven because just leaving a little led to bigger things later on. For us to be faithful, we've got to look through our cabinets. We've got to look through our houses. We've got to look through ourselves. And we've got to get rid of every ounce of it. Every inch of sin has to be gone because sin corrupts, error corrupts, and it's contagious. And the best people we have ever known, the most godly people we have ever known, can become contaminated by its contact. We've got to search for it. We've got to remove it. That was the lesson of the leaven. We turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 5. It's an illustration. Leaven is the spiritual application. It's an illustration of how evil can work and spread and become something completely different and bigger. We know about infectious diseases. When our kids were little, I'm thinking it was one of our cousins. I'm not positive on that, but one of our cousins got chicken pox. Well, we took our kids over there, let them play with them all day, knowing what was going to happen. Chicken pox spreads. One bump is enough. And sure enough, they got what we planned on. They got it, and we wanted them to get it when they were 3, not when they were 30. Get it when you're 5 and you scratch a little bit and you take those calamine lotion deals. Get it when you're 40 and you're in the hospital. We wanted them to get it. We wanted that infection to spread to them because that's what infections do. And it's what sin does. I have an uncle. I don't know if he had a Vietnam flashback or what, but he went and planted bamboo in his backyard. And his neighbors he's been on their hit list ever since because it spread like crazy. And it didn't just stay it didn't stay where he planted it. It took over his backyard. And then bamboo don't know anything about property lines. It just kept on going. And bamboo spreads. Infectious diseases spreads. Leaven spreads. And so does sin. And so does corruption. And so does contamination. Evil takes on a life of its own. Can you see that in David's life? We could go back to Samuel and the Chronicles and the Kings, but David lust after a woman. And instead of dealing with that, he just keeps on looking and he keeps on looking, and now leaven takes over and it spreads. And now he's no longer lusting. Lust leads to adultery. So now he's an adulterer. Instead of dealing with that, he puts this plan into motion and he starts trying to deceive Bathsheba's husband. Well, he was too moral himself to take part in something like that. And so he's no longer lust. He's no longer dealing with just adultery, no longer with the lies and deception. He becomes a full-fledged murderer. Lust, adultery, lies and deceiving, murder. That's what sin does. And it happened in his life, as good a man as he was, as much as he loved God. And I think it can't happen in mine. You think it can't happen in yours? We've got to look ourselves over. We've got to remove the leaven from us. Worldly minds corrupt. Irreverent minds are like leaven. And if we don't believe that, just look at Hollywood. Think about how clothes spread. Think about how fashion spreads. Think about how phrases spread. There's this group of celebrities. And what they're wearing works its way across the country just like leaven. And the things that they are singing and doing and going, it just spreads. We know that. The applications are there. The question is, will we just make sure we heed it to our own life? It's an example of the necessity of remaining morally pure and removing it out of our life. In 1 Corinthians 5, the phrase of concerning leaven is brought up, and it's talking about morality. Let's look and see. Look in 1 Corinthians 5. You know where we are. 1 Corinthians 5 is a case of gross immorality that everybody knows about, Christian and non-Christian. Didn't make any difference how righteous you were. This was wrong and everybody knew it. Verse 1 is reported commonly. So everybody's aware. It was common knowledge. It's reported commonly that there's sexual immorality among you, such sexual immorality that is not even named among the Gentiles, that one has his father's wife. You don't have to be a Christian to know that there's something wrong here. And even in Corinth and all of its immoral life, even they knew something was wrong here. And the Christians did nothing about it. There is leaven in the church of Corinth, and they haven't gone through the cabinets to clean it. They haven't removed it from themselves. Now the conclusion is, six to seven. Your glorying is not good. Strange as it sounds, they had taken some pride, I guess, in this situation. Your glorying is not good. Don't you know that a little leaven leavens the whole lump? Okay, so he asked a question for them. Seems to be a rhetorical question. He says, look through your house. You know, there's a bunch of women there. There's a bunch of cooks. You know what leaven does. Don't you know leaven spreads? Don't you know that yeast spreads? So what do we do about it? Yeah, we know that. So now what? Verse 7. Therefore purge out the old leaven, that you become a new lump and are unleavened. So he gives a question. Don't you know this? Don't you know what leaven does? Don't you know that it spreads? Well, of course we know that. Then get rid of it. You know it spreads. Now why is it there? And of course, he's not talking about fleshly bread. He's talking about sin. Don't you know that immorals corrupt? Don't you know that immorality can spread? Mark your spot. Well, we don't really have to mark it. We're going to come right back. But look in chapter 15. We don't have to mark it because we're just turning a couple pages. We'll be right back at it. Verse 33 is a memory verse. One of those fun memory verses because it's so quick and short we can learn it real fast. But the thought doesn't end. Verse 33, be not deceived. Evil companionships corrupt good morals. And so we've learned that memory verse and then we quit. Verse 34 is the same thought. Be not deceived. Evil communications, evil companionships corrupt good morals. Awake to righteousness and sin not. Do we see the connection there? Chapter 5. Don't you know leaven spreads? Then get rid of it. Chapter 15. Don't you know that evil companions corrupt good morals? Then awake up. Open your eyes and stop sinning. It's the same concept. Morality being spoken of in both cases. Wake up is the point Paul's emphasizing. Who is there among us that is not tempted by worldly things? Who is there among us that doesn't have weakness of the flesh, weakness of the human being? All of us do. The strongest will be the ones who recognize their weaknesses and deal with it. Go back to chapter 5. Unbelievably as it sounds, that seems to be Corinth's problem. Problem is not that they have fleshly weaknesses. All of us have that. They just didn't deal with it. In verse 2, it says you are puffed up. You will not mourn. Again, in verse 6, it says your glorying is not good. Their weakness wasn't that they were human. That's all of our weakness. Their problem wasn't that they stumbled. All of us stumble. Their problem is they wouldn't mourn over it. Their problem is they took pride in it. Their problem is they took glory in it. They didn't remove the leaven. Didn't remove the things that needed to be gone from their life. A case of toleration is what we have here. Again, it was common knowledge. They knew it, and they just let it slide. They knew it, never brought it up. They knew it, and they turned an eye to it. We might not be talking about sexual immorality, but are there not churches doing the same thing today? Is it possible for this church to be doing the same thing today? Something needs to be dealt with, and we don't deal with it. Or maybe it'll work out on its own. Something that needs to be dealt with, but we don't deal with it, because dealing with them, you know, that might cause some trouble. And that might, you know, that might upset a family. And that we're either going to remove leaven or we become contaminated. We get it out or we are part of the problem. Look in Romans 1. That sounds like harsh language. If we don't remove it, we're just as guilty. That sounds pretty serious. That's what Paul taught. When Paul, we studied this morning in Revelation, when Paul went out breathing God's fire, here's what he had to say about tolerating evil. First of all, let's look at the evil. Look in verse 29. Here's the evil. How many of us are going to raise our hands and volunteer for this? Unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, envy, murder, strife, deceit, malignity, whisperers, backbiters, haters of God. There's a big one. Despitefully proud, boasters, inventors of evil things. Not only do we take part in it, we make them up. Disobedient to parents, without understanding, covenant breakers. We're not honest. We're not truthful. Without natural affection. Unmerciful. That's not what we are, is it? That's not what we do, is it? Verse 32. Knowing the judgment of God, they that commit such things are worthy of death. Well, amen to that. That's what we would say. Oh, yeah, preach it on. You can't live like this and please God. This is worthy of judgment. How's that verse end? Not only those that do the same, but those that consent with them that do them. You see, I don't have to be the backbiter. I just tolerate it. I don't have to be the inventor of evil things. I just overlook it. I don't have to be the sexually immoral. I just don't deal with it. I'm guilty because I'm not removing the leaven from my life. As an individual, I've got to remove it. And as a collective group, we've got to move it. As the individual, if I don't remove it, I'm contaminated. As the group, if we don't remove it, we are contaminated because it spreads. First day of that Passover, we went through every cabinet we had to get rid of all the leaven. We can't leave any. And the spiritual application for us is we've got to be aware of ourselves. We've got to keep constantly looking at ourselves because immorality spreads. And if we don't deal with it, we are part of the problem. Look in Matthew chapter 16. There was a second way the New Testament dealt with leaven. Again, not the breadly flesh, but spiritual application. In Corinth, he says you've got to get rid of the leaven because it spreads. Talking about immoral behavior. But there was another way it was used. Matthew 16, the apostles were a little tricked by Jesus here. They're thinking in the fleshly sense. He's talking in the spiritual sense. Look in Matthew 16:6. Jesus said, "Take heed and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and Sadducees." And then in verse 7, they start talking and say, what's he talking about? What have we done? And their conclusion is, oh, I know. Do you remember that time Jesus had to feed 5,000? It's because we didn't bring enough bread. And now they think Jesus is kind of turning the screws on them. They think Jesus is reminding them about when they didn't bring enough bread. He said, you got to be careful about the leaven. And so they start trying to figure out what bread are you talking about? And then in verse 8, 9, 10, 11, there's a lot of red letters. Jesus starts opening their eyes a little bit, letting them in on the fact that he's not talking about leaven in the flesh, but leaven of the spirit. And then in verse 12, they get the picture. Then they understood how he talked to them not to beware of the leaven of bread, but of the doctrine of the Pharisees. That's the second way the New Testament warns us about leaven. The first way was in Corinth. Immoral behavior has got to be dealt with. Get it out or it'll spread. And now Jesus talking about the teachings of men. Deal with it. Don't overlook it. Don't tolerate it. Get it out because it spreads. He gives an example in Galatians 5. Paul writing to a group of churches who have been to remind ourselves of the first missionary journey, Paul, we went through those churches in Galatia. He goes to Lystra and Derbe and Iconium. And he had barely gotten on the boat to go back to end that trip before Judaizing teachers showed up. As he went from one town to the next, while he was in this one, someone had already come in teaching Judaistic teachings right behind him. Teaching that, for the Gentile to come to God. It certainly has been opened up to them, but you've also got to keep the law of Moses. So they start teaching circumcision, and they start teaching feast days, and they start bringing in things that were no longer of God's law. How did Paul deal with that? Look in verse 1, first of all, Galatians 5. He said, "Stand fast, therefore, in the liberty that Christ made us free, and be not entangled again with the yoke of bondage." He starts out by saying there is the old law, and it is one of bondage and death. It does not bring freedom. Stand fast in the liberty Christ has brought to you. He has brought you freedom of sin. Don't go back to a law that can't offer that. Stand fast where you are. Don't return. Don't go back to something that is less. Verse 2 and 3. "Behold, I, Paul, say unto you, that if you be circumcised, Christ profit you nothing. For I testify again to every man that is circumcised, that he's a debtor to do the whole law." Those Judaizing teachers that came to Galatia teaching circumcision, Paul says that doesn't mean anything anymore. It doesn't benefit you. It doesn't hurt you. But if you go back to that, if you stand by it, can you imagine some stronger Christian saying, those Judaizing teachers, I know better than that. They can't convince me of that. They might not can convince you. But what about the new convert? Can we let it slide and not remove the leaven because you are strong enough to stand? What about the ones that aren't strong enough to stand? Verse 6. "In Christ Jesus, neither circumcision avails anything nor uncircumcision, but faith which works by love." Verse 9. "A little leaven leavens the whole lump." How do you put all this together? Verses 1 through 9. Judaizing teacher shows up, teaching the false doctrine. Paul comes back and writes this letter to waken them up, to open their eyes. And he puts them on guard. To the churches at Galatia, he says, if you let this in and you don't deal with it, what comes next? A little leaven leavens the whole lump. You let circumcision in and you don't deal with that, well, then you'll be dealing with feast days next month. You don't deal with that, you'll be dealing with coming to Jerusalem to the temple. You'll be dealing with, and off he goes. A little leaven spreads. Deal with it now, or it will spread and become worse. It was the same with morality. It's the same true with doctrine. Turn to Revelation 2. Here's a great example, again, how we can be affected. "Let one Gentile be circumcised as a avenue of having sin removed." And then what is next? That's the idea Paul was giving. "Let one false doctrine come in to this church or any church and not be dealt with." And then what does it lead to? How far does it go? And exactly who becomes guilty? Do you remember how Paul in Romans says that there's morality here? There's a morality problem, and he just listed them. Three verses of moral issues. And he says, if you put up with it, you are guilty too. He says the same thing about doctrine. Look in Revelation 2. We're looking at the churches that we studied not long ago. This is the church in Pergamos. When he began to take inventory of that church, here's what he found there. Verse 14. "I've got a few things against you. Because you have there them that hold the doctrine of Balaam, who taught Balak to cast a stumbling block before the children of Israel, to eat things sacrificed to idols, to commit fornication. And you also have them that hold the doctrine of Nicolaitans, which things I hate in like manner." What do we see ourselves there? You may be thinking, yeah, but I'm not into Balaam. I'm too strong for that. I didn't buy into Nicholas's teaching. I'm too convicted for that. Did you catch what he said? Verse 14. "You have there them that hold to it." Verse 15. "You also have them that hold to it." He might not be talking to me. I might not be the one holding to it. You might not be the one holding to it. But it's there and we didn't remove it. Leaven was there, false doctrine was there, and we just let it go on. And that, and the way verse 14 started was, "I've got something against you." I stayed convicted. I stayed strong. I didn't buy into the false doctrine. I'm still guilty. It was there, and I didn't deal with it. It was there, and you ignored it. Are we putting ourselves here? Are we opening our eyes? Paul told the Corinthians to wake up and sin not. I hope we're doing that. I hope we can see ourselves in this. When you and I let error in the door, it spreads. It doesn't have to be big. It might be so small it doesn't affect you, but it might affect someone else. Therefore, it has to be dealt with. Small errors left unchallenged will grow. Just this past week, on a completely different study I was looking at, but I was reading some writings of Guy Woods. That name sounds familiar to you. Back in the 40s and 50s and 60s, he was one of the main spokesmen for the institutional movement. And I really think that if he could come back from the dead and see what's happening with churches that have brought in instrumental music, and see what's happening out in Texas where they don't even want to wear the name Church of Christ anymore, if he could come back from the dead and see that, he would say, what happened? What happened was a little leaven leavens the whole lump. You remove authority from this, well, what stopped you from removing it here? And you remove it there, and what happens? Jesus didn't die to build a basketball team. There are churches all over this country that have them because of leaven that just grew and grew. Wasn't the first step they took, but it was the conclusion that they ended up at. Read an article, not an article, I guess a poem, I guess is what it would have been called. It's talking about sheep. I don't know who wrote it. It said, one sickly sheep infects the flock and poisons all the rest. One sickly sheep infects the flock and poisons all the rest. How much poison does it take? I keep this back in my office. It's an ant killer, bug killer. I see it when if I ever see wasp or whatever building, I try to take care of them. Cost $1 at Family Dollar. So first of all, poison doesn't cost a lot of money. Pretty cheap. How much poison does it take? I'm going to leave this up here because I don't want you trusting me. Here's the ingredients. And you could, if you want to try to read it, you pronounce it, you're welcome to it. I'm just going to tell you what the numbers are. I can't pronounce them or spell them, and I'm looking at it. 99.95 inactive ingredients. You know what that leaves? Here's how much poison it takes. That's how much poison is in this. And it kills the things it touches. 99. We've all heard to say, oh, 99.9%. 99.9% doesn't do justice on that. It's 99.95% doesn't do a thing. 99.95 is inactive, wholesome ingredients. 0.05 will kill you. We all heard that thing back of Brill cream, a little dab will do you. How much poison does it take to kill you? A little dab will do you all right. How much poison does it take? A little bit. And then leaven does what it does, and it spreads, and it grows. You start out, you sprinkle a little bit of leaven over here in the elementary class in the back. Just start them out young. Then they get to the high school class and you add a little bit more leaven. Then they're in college and they've got their professors doing what they might do. And then you get somebody off on a porch swing. It's just you and me and we're just drinking lemonade and I throw a little bit more leaven on you. And then what we do, we invite someone to come spend a week with us whom we really don't even know, but we got his, you know, it came on good record from somebody else. And we don't know what they're bringing with them. You just throw a little bit of leaven here and there, and before you know, we got a problem. And we have to deal with it. Or we don't deal with it, and we've got a worse problem. If you're still in Revelation chapter 2, look in verse 20. Now talking to the church in Thyatira, he says, I have a few things against you. What's the problem? You have suffered the woman Jezebel, her calls herself a prophetess, to teach. And then it goes on to talk about what she taught. What was the problem in Pergamos? Nicholas is there. Balaam is there. And nobody dealt with it. They didn't remove the leaven. What's the problem in Thyatira? Jezebel is there and nobody is dealing with her leaven. Nobody is dealing with her doctrine. A little leaven leavens the whole lump. Pergamos rejected because of what they've got. Thyatira, or not Thyatira, but yeah, it is like Thyatira, verse 18. Christ has something against them because they didn't remove the leaven. It might seem insignificant to us, but so does a little bit of poison, and it kills. Our conclusion has to be that we'll accept no truth, or no truce rather. We will not compromise, we'll not ignore, will not tolerate. We've got to keep watch and remove anything that might be on us. Turn back to Exodus 12. Is this putting us on guard? I hope it's waking us up both to the individual and to the group. You and I, as Christians, spiritually speaking, are to be unleavened. We've got to remove sin from our life, deceit from our life, corruption from our life. Wickedness does not fit in the life of a Christian. It's inconsistent. We can't call ourselves unleavened while there is sin that we refuse to deal with, that we refuse to remove. And neither can this church. We can put whatever we want to on the brick. We can put whatever we want to on the site or on the building. We can know we are not a church of Christ while there is sin if it's not being dealt with. It has to be unleavened. It's all He will accept. Each individual obligated to maintain purity, to stay corrupted. One thing to throw in, and it's a valid point, is that just as we've been talking about the evil of leaven, because that's how Paul did it, that's how Christ did it. But there is also the sense in which good can spread. Well, we need to recognize that. You and I can be an influence for good, and hopefully that leaven can spread as well. You remember in Acts chapter 27 and 28, Paul was on a ship that shipwrecked. A lot of people got their lives saved because Paul was on that ship. So leaven can spread in a good way as well. And when you think about the everyday obligations you and I've got, obligations of family, well, they might not all be faithful, obligations of business dealings, obligations with society. There's a lot of people we come into contact with. We can't quit doing that. We just got to make sure who's influencing who. Sure, the good can spread. But take your Bibles home today and find a case in the New Testament where leaven was used in a good sense. It's talking about immorality. Get rid of it. It's talking about doctrine. Get rid of it. Remove it. It can spread for good. Be careful who's influencing who. In Exodus 12, verse 15, again, where we started. One thing we need different to make sure we see. I don't think anybody would not think it. But let's just emphasize that as we close. In verse 15, it says, 7 days you'll be unleavened. From the first day you'll put leaven out of your house, and whosoever eats leaven for the first day till the seventh day, that soul will be cut off. Under the old law, that memorial lasted a week. Make sure we understand that's not the Christian life. You and I might can keep ourselves pure for 7 days. We might be able to keep ourselves unpolluted for 7 days. We might work really hard for 7 days to get the leaven, sinful leaven, out of our life. That does not make a faithful life. It is for as long as we live. Make sure we understand that this was the symbol. We've got to make the spiritual application. Get your songbooks out. The first symptoms we have to deal with. Don't ignore it. Don't put it off. Let's go back to some basics as we close. Ultimately, there's only one way to have any leaven removed from our life. And that's thankfully because of the blood of Christ. If you're not a Christian, there's a lot of sin in your life. It can be removed, not because of what you've done or can do, because of what Christ has already done. But you need to obey. You've got to confess Him. You've got to repent. And you've got to be baptized for the remission of sins. But then you can become unleavened. If you are a Christian, you can also become unleavened. Again, not because of what you've done or can do, but because of what Christ did when He shed blood for you. And it can cleanse you today and remove whatever leaven might be there. But you have to come to Him. You have to repent. You have to ask Him to forgive you, and He will. Whether immorality has affected us, whether we have let false doctrines somehow affect us and our actions and our thoughts, we can't please God with either one. Get rid of them. Let's look through our cabinets, look through our houses, look through our life, and get rid of the things that ought not be there. If you need to respond in a public way, let's do that now.